All right, it is officially 6 p.m., so we will call this evening's September 5th Planning Commission meeting to order. Can I have a roll call, please?
Chair Maravilla?
Here.
Vice Chair Berlin?
Here.
Commissioner Buchanan?
Here.
Commissioner Roof?
Here.
And Commissioner Sekerson?
Here. Thank you. Commissioner Buchanan, would you mind leading us in the flag salute? Thank you so much. The next item on our agenda is an agenda review. Does anyone want to revise the order of the agenda tonight? No. All right. Number five is community comments and suggestions. This public comment period is an invitation to the members of our community to present issues, thoughts, or suggestions on matters that are not scheduled on this agenda for the evening. Comments should also be limited to those matters that are within the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission. If you are on Zoom, you can provide public comment remotely by using the raise hand feature. But first, we will take any public comments in the room tonight. Is there anyone here that would like to make a comment? That is no. Is there anyone on Zoom tonight that would like to make a public comment?
Madam Chair, there are no members of the public in attendance.
Thank you so much. All right, with that, we'll close the public comment period and move on to written communications. Was there any correspondence or supplemental information for tonight?
There are none for this evening.
Awesome. Thank you. All right, moving right along to the consent agenda. Do we have any questions about the minutes or anything like that? Is there any public comment about the minutes or the consent agenda? Seeing none in the room, is there any online?
There are still no members of the public.
Thank you.
Oh, I just wanted to add about the minutes that I was marked both present and absent, but I was late. But I told Andrew about it already.
So
just amend it to the...
Yeah, so we can amend the minutes too. I guess she would be present. All right, can I have, I will motion to approve the consent agenda. Do I have a second?
No, second that.
Thank you. Can I have a vote, please?
Yes. Chair Maravilla?
Yes.
Vice Chair Berlin?
Yes.
Commissioner Buchanan?
Yes.
Commissioner Roof?
Yes.
And Commissioner Sekerson?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Now we'll move on to item 8, which is our public hearing item, which is consideration of Development Code Amendment 23-005, amendments to the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding restrictions on irrigated turf installation and use citywide. Is there a report this evening?
No. Staff is recommending that we continue this item to the next Planning Commission meeting on September 19th. Staff is not prepared to bring it. Quite yet, just ironing out some fine details, so we can expect that at our next meeting.
Great. Thank you so much. Is there any questions from the Commission on that at all? Is there any public comment on this public comment item? There's none in the room. Is there any online?
There are still no members of the public.
Thank you. Do I have a motion to...
Oh, yeah, we need a motion.
We do need a motion.
Yeah, I'll make a motion. Sorry, let me get this thing. Rusty here. I would make a motion regarding item 8A, the consideration of Development Code Amendment 23-005, to continue it to the next meeting scheduled for September 19th.
Thank you. I will second that motion. Can I have a vote, please?
Yes. Vice Chair Berlin?
Yes.
Chair Maravilla?
Yes.
Commissioner Buchanan?
Yes.
Commissioner Roof?
Yes.
And Commissioner Sekerson?
Yes.
All right. Motion passes to table this to the September 19th Planning Commission meeting. Moving along to item 9, which is our non-public hearing items, we have a general plan update study session. Is there a report on this one?
Yes, there is.
Great. Thank you.
Brian Pedrotti, Community Development Director. And this is an informational study session on the general plan update. And It's an opportunity for the Planning Commission members to identify key issues, important items that you see coming up in the general plan update. This is a exciting time, you know, get input from the community, from all our stakeholders, and we only get to do this very, very occasionally. You know, look at our existing city, evaluate our current conditions, and look at our look into the future and comprehensively vision that future. So I'll pass it over to Andrew. He's got a presentation, and we're here to answer questions afterward.
Thank you, Brian. Good evening, members of the Planning Commission. As Brian said, I'm Andrew Perez, the city's planning manager. And I'm here this evening to really walk you through a study session, introduce the general plan update process and project itself, and I'm kind of explain where we're going from here over the next 3 years. So back in November of 2022, City Council initiated this project by allowing staff to issue an RFP to obtain consultant services to assist city staff with the update process. The city did interview one respondent to the RFP, and we entered into an agreement with Mentir Harnish in March of this year to act as a consultant for this project. So Mentir Harnish is a small land use and planning consulting firm based out of Sacramento. They do specialize in general plan updates and development code updates, having prepared over 60 general plans throughout the state. So pictured here are Brent Gibbons and Michael Gibbons, our project director and project manager with this firm. Both are graduates of Cal Poly, so they are familiar with our area and are eager to get back here and help us through this project. And so Mentir Harnish is not alone in helping us with the update. Rincon and Associates is a local environmental firm that will help the city with the program EIR for the general plan update. TNDG is an economic advisor that will assist with the economic analysis that will inform the update to the economic development element, the land use element, and potentially housing element and others. And finally, we have GHD, who's acting as a subconsultant that will help with all things mobility and transportation. GHD is very familiar with the city, having helped us with our circulation element update and most recently assisted with the Halcyon Complete Streets plan that was adopted this past summer. So tonight, we're really looking to accomplish five things. I will provide an overview of the general plan, what it is, and statutory requirements. The process that we are looking at to update the general plan. Explain the community engagement strategy that we envision for this process. And then allow an opportunity for questions from the commission, as well as a kind of an open discussion about the project update itself, and then some next steps, where we're going from here. So looking at some of our basics about what is a general plan. It's required by state law for every jurisdiction to have a general plan, and it's really the foundational document for every community. It establishes the goals and policies that this planning commission and our city council relies on for a variety of decisions, and these can be land use decisions, allotment of resources, economic development, equity and inclusion issues, and so on and so forth. It's really a visionary document that looks, 20 to 30 years into the future. So it needs to represent the community's vision for the future. So really want to stress that it's not a staff project. It's not a consultant project. It's really the community's project. And we're really going to do everything we can to solicit input and feedback and engagement from the community, so we end up with a plan that's representative of our community's vision. General plans that are successful really have three things in common. They are general in that they evaluate broad issue areas. So a general plan's divided into different chapters referred to as elements, and these each tackle a different issue area. So we have, for example, land use elements, housing elements, conservation, open space, and so on. General plans are also comprehensive. So they evaluate existing conditions, look at different alternative scenarios in terms of growth scenarios. So it could be a low growth, focusing on redevelopment. It could be a high growth scenario or somewhere in between. And that's something that we're going to rely on the public to inform us and direct this project. And general plans are long term. As I mentioned, 20 to 30 years is the general horizon for most plans. So they're really visionary and rely on some projecting and anticipation about where the community wants to be itself to be in the next few decades. So this graphic illustrates how a general plan works in relation to our zoning ordinance, our development code, and then project-specific applications. So general plan there at the bottom being the most foundational, long-term, general type document. Then we have our zoning ordinance, which implements the policies, objectives, and programs of the general plan. And then more specific is subdivision maps. These are tract maps and parcel maps that react to project-specific opportunities and constraints within the zoning ordinance. And then finally, building permits, which result in the built environment being constructed. So state law requires that general plans cover an identified planning area and that they are internally consistent. So this means that no element carries more weight than another. They're all equal. There's consistency between the elements and within the elements, and that all text and diagrams within the plan are consistent with one another. So the guidance for general plans comes from the Governor's Office of Planning and Research, often referred to as OPR. And so this outlines all the statutory requirements, including what elements are required to be in a general plan. So for the longest time, there were 7 required elements, being land use, circulation, housing, conservation, open space, safety, and noise. And most recently, the guidelines were updated to require an environmental justice element. So this is a kind of neat opportunity to create a new element to the city for the city that will look at addressing inequalities that currently exist and prevent those from perpetuating in the future. So getting into the update process itself, staff and the consultant have identified 8 areas to focus on throughout the update. So first and foremost, this is a comprehensive update of almost all the elements. We say almost because our circulation element was updated in 2021. The housing element was updated in 2020 and is updated on regular intervals as required by the state. So we're going to look at all other elements, create the new environmental justice element, and then upon completion of that update, we'll look at updating the development code to ensure it is consistent with the general plan and implements new general plan goals, objectives, and policies. Then after the development code is updated, we will look at updating the city's climate action plan, which is another long-range planning document that takes inventory of greenhouse gas emissions and identifies strategies to reduce those to react to climate change. One common theme that'll be present throughout the update project, and you'll hear me touch on multiple times throughout this presentation, is the city's diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice policy. We're really gonna stress reaching out and engaging with the entire community, not just those that are typically involved in the planning process. So we wanna reach all of our community members to make sure it's a plan that represents our city as a whole and all of us. So we did bring on another consultant who specializes in DEI policies. They'll review all of our written documents, our workshop materials, to make sure that they're as inclusive as possible. Throughout the process, staff and the consultant will look to capture best practices and emerging trends in the world of planning and the related element fields, and then decide which are most appropriate for Arroyo Grande and let this planning commission, city council, and the residents let us know if those are appropriate and applicable for the general plan. At the end of the project, we anticipate that the general plan will be compliant with the most current state laws and statutory requirements and all the general plan guidelines. So that said, this is going to involve updates to the vision for the general plan and the community itself, all the goals, policies, and implementation measures that are contained in the general plan. And to do this, we're really going to need robust community engagement. In a few slides, we'll go through some of the areas that we're already focusing on and areas we or techniques that we're going to focus on and trying to pull out as much engagement as we can from the community. So I recognize this is impossible to read for everybody, but it outlines the 11 phases that we set up to carry out this process, and it is a three-year project schedule. When we had discussions with City Council, we weighed the pros and cons of a two-year versus a three-year schedule. And ultimately, based on the scope of work that councils directed us to carry out, became pretty obvious that a three-year schedule was required to get that all done in a manner that we're going to be proud of and produce a document that works for the city. So I'll quickly go through each of the 11 phases, starting with project initiation. So once we brought on Mentor Harnish, we had a kickoff meeting with staff and the consultant, kind of identifying certain opportunity areas, maybe some challenging areas, and then that carried over into the study session that we had with City Council 2 weeks ago. And we began to formulate the public outreach strategy. So this is, well, in the second phase listed here, it's going to be present throughout the entire update. And it's a kind of a malleable strategy. We can adapt it as we go along and see what's successful and what's not, and adapt as necessary. We're currently in the gathering and analyzing of data step. This included staff providing quite a bit of research and data to the consultant. All of our planning documents, GIS data, maps, everything related to the general plan in its existing form was handed over, and the consultant is currently analyzing that, organizing it, and kind of identifying where to go from here. A big part of this step is also a staff is conducting a general plan audit of all of our existing policies, programs, objectives. So over 400 line items, identifying which have been accomplished, which are obsolete, which should be maintained, refined, et cetera. And that's quite a big work effort, but we're making good headway there. And then here in the visioning and guiding principles stage, this is really the first opportunity for the robust community engagement. As I mentioned previously, the vision is the foundation of the general plan update, and we're really going to rely on the community's vision, their ideas, what they see, and what they envision for the community over the next couple of decades. So there'll be many opportunities for engagement and feedback, and we'll get into those in a little bit. Once we identify a vision, the consultant and staff will look at developing alternatives. So that, as I described earlier, these could be slow or small growth alternative where we focus on redeveloping existing developed areas, or potentially looking at our sphere of influence and developing those areas somewhere in between. And then once those alternatives are materialized, we can identify which one as a community we want to go with and start drafting the individual elements of the general plan. Again, Planning Commission, Council, and community would be involved in the drafting, reviewing draft documents, providing feedback as we go along. And kind of in the background of all these steps, the environmental consultant will be working on the program EIR, where the potential environmental impacts will be evaluated, and this will be based off land use changes, circulation changes, anything that's proposed to change significantly in the general plan. And then finally, we get to the public review and adoption phase. So draft documents will be released. We'll receive feedback from the public and each of our advisory boards. And then hopefully run those through Planning Commission, City Council for an adoption of the plan. Following the adoption, we'll undertake and begin the development code update process. This is where we will update the development code and zoning ordinance in reaction to those changes in the general plan to implement the new policies and see those changes happen on the ground. And here in the, it's in the 10 spot, but it doesn't really fit neatly anywhere else, but the economic development analysis will happen kind of throughout also. As we weigh the pros and cons of certain land use changes, we will also weigh the economic impacts of those changes and react accordingly. And then finally, the last step of this three-year phase is the update to the Climate Action Plan. And as I mentioned, this is a update to the document that evaluates our greenhouse gas emissions for different sectors throughout the city and identify strategies to reduce those. So into the community engagement strategies, really five different aspects of the outreach program, the first being the city's website that was created for this project specifically. So this can be found at planarroyogrande.com, and this is really the hub for all things general plan. There's an opportunity to review draft documents, see basics about general plan, or have visit the frequently asked questions section of the document, or the website, I'm sorry. It's also a place where we can notify and publicize all meetings, public hearings related to the general plan. This is a fully accessible website, so it can be translated into, right now I think it's translated in 8 different languages. There's also functions that will help people with, you know, they're hearing impaired or have sight impairments. So it's really a really great inclusive website. And here we have the branding and project logos that were developed by the consultant for this plan. It'll help easily identify any documents, materials identified or associated with the general plan update. So make it easily identifiable. We also have business cards with this logo on it, and a QR code on the back so people can easily access the website from their phone, and I'll be able to distribute some of those cards here this evening. The city fully intends to use all of its social media channels to publicize public hearings and workshops associated with the general plan update. The website also has a feature that allows people to sign up, enter their email, and they'll be notified of all things general plans. The website's been live for about 2 weeks, and we have over 50 signups already, so seeing some good growth and hope to see that just keep expanding. There will also be periodic newsletters that will be distributed to the community. Council did direct staff and the consultant to distribute a hard copy of the first newsletter to everyone throughout the city, so we are still formulating how we're going to make that happen efficiently, so be on the lookout for that. And then I think in the future beyond that, it'll be an electronic PDF that will be emailed to folks that are signed up. And then finally, there's a series of workshops and pop-up events that'll be associated with the general plan update. While the first opportunity is going to be more of the traditional workshop, I think in talking with the consultant, we are leaning towards some non-traditional public engagement strategies, more likely pop-up events at widely attended events such as the Harvest Festival, maybe the Big Ditch Market, stuff like that, where people are already coming, and hopefully to capture them that way. So as I mentioned before, this is still kind of in the works in terms of what the strategy is and dates and times, but be on the lookout and there'll be many opportunities for engagement. So that leads us into our first community workshop on Thursday, October 5th, right here in the council chambers. And we'll start at 6 p.m. This is really just an opportunity for the community to get associated with the project, kind of explain some of the basics of what we hope to achieve, and some initial engagement activities to get some input and feedback from the public. So before I turn it over to the commission for questions and a discussion, just kind of run through some next steps here. So we'll have our community workshop on October 5th. And then kind of concurrently, we'll be identifying and facilitating stakeholder interviews. And then staff will finish up with the general plan audit, and then finally prepare and release an existing conditions and trends workbook that will identify patterns of development, where we are now, identify some opportunity areas, and that can inform the vision and future steps. So three things that I'll be asking the commission to address this evening. The first being indicators of success. So a question associated is, when the general plan update is complete, what would make you feel the process was a successful effort? Also asking to identify key challenges. So are there any additional key challenges in Arroyo Grande that you feel the general plan should address? And finally, key opportunities. Identify any opportunities that exist in Arroyo Grande that the general plan should enhance or protect. So, that's it for my presentation. I'll turn it over to the chair for questions and discussion.
Thank you so much for that. We'll start with questions or, from the commission members. I'll start down here. Commissioner Sackerson. Sorry, you looked surprised.
Thank you for that presentation. That was really helpful. My first question actually is, can I get an email of those slides? It would just be kind of helpful just to review it.
Yeah, and awesome. We will put them up on the website.
The website as well. Perfect. And then my second question is that presentation going to be basically the same given on October 5th for the general public?
No, we'll have a brand new presentation.
Okay.
I don't know what that looks like yet, but it'll be new.
Okay. Sure. Those are my just immediate questions. I have much more specific ones, but I think I need a little bit of time to like formulate them properly. So I'm going to pass for now.
Commissioner Roof, do you have any question?
Thanks. So just confirming, thank you for the presentation. You're looking for us to address at this time the indicators of success, the challenges, and the opportunities. Is that what you'd like to hear right now?
Yeah, at a minimum. And if there are any other comments or suggestions, comments, feel free to send those our way.
Okay, I haven't super thought it out, but I will give it a first go. I did
can
go
I
to
direct the... one quick okay, second. Yeah, no. Can we have this more as an open conversation, or do we need to be as strict with anything as we usually do?
No, I think this can be a fairly open.
Okay.
Fairly open conversation.
So I'm okay with that. If everyone else is cool with that.
Yeah.
So go ahead. Oh, okay. Sure. I think I did go to the website and I did sign up, so I'm one of those 50. So I'll be getting the updates. I did look around the website and I thought it was really easy to navigate, helpful. So I was really excited to see that. And I think if I'm remembering right, I was directed to the website through a social media post. So I'm like, that's already starting to work. And I'm hoping to see, as we get closer to October, more people sharing that so that we can get community engagement. And as far as an indicator of success, I really think that would be one of my biggest indicators, is that we're getting that really robust community engagement that you all are talking about. When we reviewed the Halcyon Complete Street Plan, that was kind of the way I'm looking at it, a little bit of a precursor to this. I was really impressed with the amount of engagement from the community on what they wanted to see. And I remember coming in here thinking, oh, are people going to be upset? How's it going to go? And everybody who came was really excited about what the plan was. So I think Not everyone's going to be happy with everything all the time, and I understand that, but I think an indicator of success for me would be to see that that community engagement reaching as many people as we can. I think one of the key challenges, and this is just off the top of my head, but I've lived here about 20 years now, and it seems like there's a real tug between people who don't want to see any change and people who are really excited about the changes. So I think a key challenge is going to be finding a balance that not everyone's going to be happy with everything, but that we can preserve things that people feel are important while we also look forward and know change is coming. We want to shape that to be what everybody wants. So I feel like that'll be a process over the course of the general plan update. Let me think on key opportunities. If I thought about this ahead, I think I would have had a better idea. But yeah. let me put a pin, and then I'll think through it as other people are speaking. Thank you.
Yeah, I think we can all just kind of chime in on things too, if you guys are comfortable with that too.
Yeah, I'll jump in here. Thanks, Andrew. Appreciate that. I was all excited because I stumbled on the city council meeting when the Mintier Harnish guys were presenting it. And so I was all jacked up. Yeah, this is so cool. Finally, we're here. So I just have a couple of questions. The environmental justice element that the state added to everybody's list, what does that actually, does anyone know what that really means? I mean, like, I don't, in my mind, you know, I'm an environmental justice warrior. I mean, environmental justice has a really positive ring to it. I get that. But what does it mean in the scope of a general plan? And more importantly, what does that mean jurisdictionally to a city? I know maybe that's too complex of a question to answer, but I just don't know what that means. And I know it's the latest add-on element that's part of the general plan. So I'm just kind of curious, is like, well, we'll get there when we get there. I know that. But what does that mean? I just don't know what it means.
So I anticipated this question.
Okay.
The requirement came about through a series of Senate bills, one of them being Senate Bill 1000. And it says the purpose of the legislation is to address the unique or compounded health risks in disadvantaged communities by decreasing pollution exposure, increasing community assets, and improving overall health. So it's looking at the relationships of land uses versus, not placing industrial uses next to disadvantaged communities or schools, and really looking at our land uses and where we place our community facilities.
Okay.
So where there's equitable access and all that.
That's great. That's helpful.
And I'll just kind of add on to that too. We're taking a perspective of the environmental justice element as well. A lot of this is going to be heavy with the public engagement and the outreach process. So when we talk about environmental justice, we want to make sure that, folks out in the city are, everybody who has the opportunity to come out and give input has that opportunity, and that we incorporate that into it. I think by doing that, we have a much better chance of coming up with an environmental justice element that's good, and an overall general plan that really reflects the community and the vision of the community overall.
Okay. Yeah, for me personally, that's going to be an indicator of success on this for myself, is to make sure that the members of our community are adequately represented, and it's not just, we'll say, older white homeowners, for the most part, putting all their input into this general plan. We need to be looking at the entire community, both, racially, age, renting versus, economically, all those kind of things. Because I think a lot of things happen in a lot of cities that are, very much geared towards people who have means and who don't.
Yeah. Thank you, and I echo your sentiments, Chair. So I did my homework because that's the way I roll. I used the template, and so I even knew the three questions you were going to be asking for us. So
So I'll give you that in greater detail as we go through it. But and maybe you guys, if I throw those out there, you can piggyback on.
What template are you talking about?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Impressed. Yeah. So the same three questions that Andrew was asking us for input on, the consultants asked the city council. And so the council members, and some of them, it was really interesting. There were only three public members. We've got one. Thank you. But there were, you know, a wide variety of experience. Jim Guthrie was here, and, you know, Barnich and Rusum were all here when the general plan was first, you know, last written or rewritten. I think all three of them were on maybe some capacity, maybe not all city council at the time. But anyways, so their breadth and width, and Lon, of course, is good new energy with lots of good ideas. And so they all just put their list out there, and it was well received by the consultants. This is exactly the kind of stuff we want to hear. Just our initial gut reaction as to what you could foresee. But again, because this is literally brand new to all of us, this is a lot to process in one evening when we haven't really had a handout to study anything. So I'll give you some ideas of the kind of stuff that I heard, but let me just go and tie into what some of my colleagues were saying. I also went to the website right away and logged on, and it's really user-friendly. It's clean. It's got a good, these guys look like they know what they're doing. And I laugh because Lon George, sitting city council, is somehow in the website building business. And she's like, I'm going to be watching this website. And she was holding those consultants accountable for making sure this is a highly functional website. And it seems to be at first glance. And they said, if you find something that's not right, please let us know and we'll try to make it right. So at first glance, it looks like an awesome thing. Many things about it seem the accessibility. Of course, the challenge, again, we're talking about the most important thing that seems to be consistently the message that everyone tonight has said, and then was, we need all sectors of AG residents, all of them, from people that are homeless to, you know, those that live high on the hill. We need everybody's participation and feedback about what their vision, not what we're at currently or what it has been. This is a visionary document, so we need their ideas and feedback about what they foresee. So the key being, we've got to get as much inclusive nature to these workshops and get people. We've got to find them, because they will not come to us necessarily. We got to find them. And I know the consultants heard that loud and clear. So I like the idea of pop-ups and going where the locals go. I mean, I know the mayor talked about, you know, Trader Joe's. Like, where do the local AG people go? And I'm not just talking middle-class AG. I'm talking about everywhere. So, you know, you got farmers markets. You got Big Ditch. You got, you know, AG High football games. You got Andrini's. You got the Villa. You know, you got the farmers market. You know, we got to go where the people are. And wherever that is, the challenge is the people that are not, you know, middle-class. The challenges are people that are working 6 days a week and only have Sundays to do something like this. So we got to somehow get to them, and maybe it's not in person even. If that's why the mailer, I think, is so important, that we get a mailer in somebody's hand, and bilingually especially. However we need to do it, we just, you know, the outreach is paramount. It's my measurement of success. That's got to be number one. Let's see. I know it's a long, long process. 3 years is an awful long time. I do understand it's a dynamic process, and there's a lot of feedback loops that'll be happening simultaneously. Like you mentioned, the economic thing, because that'll obviously weigh in a lot of our decisions about how and where we consider growth, about the impacts of that, be it expanding our sphere of influence, or, you know, basically taking our city boundaries and taking it further. That's nothing but money out. We have to also balance that with revenue coming in. And so, you know, economic drivers for our city are hugely important. Where's the money going to come from to support our city? And that's all the infrastructure, all the staffing needs. You know, it costs a lot of money, as we know, to run a city. And it's not easy to do if you don't have new sources of revenue. So that's why bond measures and things like that are really tough. So anyways, let me just go down some of my indications of success. How will we know? And some of this I jotted down in conjunction with what City Council said. How will we know if this has been a good general plan update? I think one of the real important ones, and Lon brought this up, I think, is it useful? Is a general plan going to be useful as a planning tool as we look forward? So when we sit down now as a planning commission and look at stuff, we have development code and we have a general plan to reference. And you guys do a great job in your staff reports referencing, you know, development code and general plan sections that are relevant to what we're looking at. It has to be consistent and it has to be a useful tool for people that are sitting here making decisions for the benefit of the general public. So that's a really important one, and I don't think that should be taken lightly. It needs to be a useful planning tool and consistent with the municipal ordinances. And you mentioned that at the very end, phase 11 or something is, you know, meshing it with the development code. I think that's phase whatever it was. It's on there. Whatever phase it is. But so that's important. You know, I know you're doing that already. You're probably already doing that with the general plan audit that you guys are doing, just to see. And I know even when I sat in architecture review, we would always be up against what's a guideline and what's a standard. And so whatever we can do, and I know there's stuff coming from the state to get all the subjective stuff out of there and make things much more objective and useful for planning or people sitting in judgment of something. Does it check the box or does it not? It's many cases, it can be a black and white, yes, it does or no, it doesn't matter. So planning tool, identify, this is another indicator of success. Are we able to identify areas of potential revenue generation, community development assistance? I mean, you know, community development, and Brian, I'm not taking a shot at you. Community development is like, okay, how do we grow our economy as a city, not just to provide jobs, but to provide revenue for the city to pay for streets and, you know, the services that we depend on. So we need to identify new sources of that. And I don't know where that comes from, but hopefully in this process, we'll be able to figure some of that out, or at least target some areas. Widespread participation. Let's see. We have confidence that what we do will, that what we come up with for idea of change. So we as a community, and really most important to the general public, and it's already been said twice tonight, this is the residents of AG's process. It's not our process. We're all in this together to put forth the map for what works. But now then it comes to us to make sure that what we come up with, how are we going to implement it? We can't just dream lofty ideas. We have to put in secure steps to make sure it can be implemented. So that would be a measure of success too, is if we put in ideas of change that we all agree that we would like to see, then what are going to be the milestones to make sure that that is enabled, that that can happen? And the example they brought up last time, they had a great bunch of public input last time, and it was all moving in the right direction of infill mixed-use development. And in particular, I think the East Grand Corridor. And so in concept, everyone says, yeah, that's what we want to do. Take these underutilized lots and use them better. And nice, we have that concept, but it just doesn't happen if you leave it to marketplace conditions. So somehow we need to incentivize that change or somehow put in the mechanisms to allow that change or to, you know, give incentive to make that happen. So I don't know how that happens, but I'm just, that was a comment that came up and it makes total sense. We can't just dream without having the steps to make that happen. Another one came up, anticipating development. So we're not just riding the trends or checking the box because the state says, yeah, most cities are doing this. This is what you should do. But we're actually removing some of those barriers and thinking creatively as a community to handle that kind of change. And again, you know, the general plan update should reflect our community, our input, and the shared visions we as a community have, not some bureaucratic checkbox. here's a key challenge. Okay, so moving on to key challenges. That was the second question asked. So what are the key challenges that I foresee? And it's already been mentioned, but finding balance between Old Village, you know, we've got a lot of older, you know, residents that are very tied to the history, and AG has a tremendous history. We do not want to sabotage that, lose that, but we definitely have to accommodate growth. It's being mandated from the top down, not radical growth, but some kind of housing growth for sure, and also the vital economic growth that will make us a healthy city. But to do it at our pace and our location with our ideas, and so that is a tough thing. The challenge is to balance that growth with our history. And I guess, again, the vision of this document is to look forward and not necessarily look back. Respect the history, of course, but we got to plan for the future. Let's see. We really need to help the public evaluate what they want or our city to look like by giving them a metric of choices. We can't just say, what do you want? What is it? It's really easy, first of all, from a public perspective, from a guy that looks at stuff and has been known to complain, but that's how I got sitting in this seat. You know what? It's really easy to sit there and complain about stuff. It's a lot more challenging to come to the table with solutions. And so we need to enable the public to not just it's hard. If you ask somebody, what three things would you change about Arroyo Grande? Well, you know, not easy to come up with, but you could ask them that same question, like, would you rather see more housing or more agriculture? Would you rather see more traffic on the, you know, you can phrase the question that will direct them to give you an answer that will give you some indication of the result that they want.
I feel like we'd have to be pretty careful with that, though, too, because it could be very leading.
Yeah, and that is the key. I would lean on the consultants who I would imagine are in. They've done 60 of these. I agree with you completely.
Yeah, it feels like there needs to be more of an education process for the public, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I don't know how you do that, but I think if you just leave an open-ended question, there will be reluctance for people to add anything to it. They're kind of deer in the headlights, like, oh, well, yeah, it's important to me, but I don't have the solution. And so it's important to identify the problem, sure, but it's also helpful if you can frame possible direction or solution. But I agree, you can get into trouble. So that's almost, you know, it's a problem.
Kind of goes back to what you were mentioning, and I'm probably using my own words here, but explaining and executing a new general plan update and having it straddle that line between being just a vision versus an actionable plan guide.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as just a typical citizen, I mean, I care deeply about this. I'm going to be very excited to be a part of this, but I'm struggling with it, wrapping my mind around all the different possibilities. So I think in that public outreach portion at every step of the way, I almost think we just need to break it down to very specific topics at any given point, mm-hmm. to make it not so overwhelming.
Agreed.
But yeah, I mean, if you're talking about asking Joe Public, okay, well, what do you want? The great thing is you're going to get it from their specific point of view where they are currently. So if they're, you know, a single parent with kids in junior high, they're going to come at it from that approach, which is great because you want that. But you also want to be able to ask them, okay, so what do you think your kids are going to want if you want them to move back here in 20, 30 years? Yeah. Because that's sure. That's something to consider too. I really think that the idea of straddling vision versus an actionable plan is going to keep going back to people asking the very pragmatic question, well, how do we do this? How are we going to afford it? Does this mean you guys are going to want more taxes? Yeah. Does this mean you're going to, you know, raise more money? How are you doing this? And I think that's going to be one of the big hurdles when you're talking about challenges, is going to be able to say, okay, yes and no. We don't have a plan yet on how to address it. First, we need to figure out what the goals are. And then that's something that, okay, well, if you're interested in it, then help us figure out solutions. I think that conversation, that dialogue is going to be the most beneficial thing we get out of this.
Absolutely. And it feels like I like that they're, that you want, that we want actionable solutions, but I don't want them to be limiting to what our vision could be.
Absolutely.
With not being able to find a current actionable solution.
Yeah. In some ways, I envision the first phase of this public input is really a brainstorming session where there's no bad ideas. Just throw it all out there and see what sticks. And then you whittle it down. And I'm not suggesting that we only give them, you know, limited choices. Like, do you want this or this, A or B? It's not like having a 3-year-old. You got to say, do you want chocolate or vanilla? You know, it's like, sorry for that analogy, but there's a lot of parents here that can get it. But you know, I do think somehow we have to provide the general public, and I'm going to lean on the facilitators probably, not necessarily staff. I think the facilitators probably have some questionnaires that they've used successfully that are able to steer the consensus of where the general public wants to go. I don't know that, but I would hope that would be one of their tools. If it's not, I mean, the questionnaire that came up the last time we did the general plan, I was living here then. I wasn't in any capacity other than general public. And I do remember it felt good to get the questionnaire that came home and take, you know, a half hour to sit down with my wife and talk about, you know, what do you think makes sense here? But I don't even remember the specific questions. It would be interesting. I bet somewhere in the archive somebody has the survey. You know, I'm not saying that was the right one, but it did feel as a general public citizen that they were going to listen to me. And I think that that's really important, that the public feels they are being heard, whatever it is. For sure, that's a huge measure of success back to that. Key challenges, we go back to this again, economic growth. I mean, I am generally in my mind, and I would label myself a slow or no growth guy, but you will die on the vine if we don't accommodate some growth. So economic growth is really important. For example, again, not picking on you, Brian, but, you know, I live by the Trader Joe's Center. There's 3 functioning stores in that center. Chili's went away 6 years ago. You know, Pier 1 and Baja Fresh, and that particular shopping center, there's other examples, of course, too, but that particular shopping center is greatly underutilized. It's like it's just taking up space and there's no revenue coming in for anybody. So what good is it doing? It's just taking up space. So anyways, how do we better utilize the stuff that is already here? You know, that's a key challenge.
I feel like that's, you're touching on one of the biggest challenges we're going to have, right? So we see developments that are currently in existence that are underutilized, but then we have to rely on marketplace conditions. So if it's a privately owned center, there's not a whole lot that the city can do unless, like what you had touched on, was incentivizing somehow.
Yeah.
Like if you fill all of these and bring in X number of dollars in sales tax as a result, perhaps the city could offer this. And, and is that something that, does that exist? I mean, does AG participate in anything like that? I don't even know the answer to that. Yeah. Do you know?
Not currently, but like as Bruce was mentioning, everything's on the table initially, and we'll rely on our economic development consultant to kind of rely on their expertise and incentives and programs that have been successful elsewhere and see if they're appropriate for Arroyo Grande and hopefully drive some economic growth.
Because at the end of the day, every landowner, every business owner, I mean, is going to respond to money. They're going to respond. If there's money there, they'll invest more if it means that they know in the long term they'll make more. So, I mean, I'm all for that.
Yeah.
So I'd like to chime in here just because
I didn't mean to turn my back to you.
No, it's fine. The discussion was great and gave me a lot of ideas. And this is the second time we've talked about market forces. So I just wanted, I had this on my list of key opportunities. And I think the opportunity here that doesn't get discussed enough is that we are drastically shaping the market with this general plan. The market isn't stagnant. We have the ability to shape the market of if I'm a builder, if I'm a business owner, what are the potential land uses in the city? What does the development code look like? How do I make a specific project? If I'm a builder, how do I make that pencil out? If I'm a business owner, what are the potential business spaces out there in the market that I can conduct my business in? So the market isn't a stagnant thing, and we're not the only folks to in the city to say we can't do much about the market, but I think that's not true at all. We shape the market with these policies that we're about to implement. So one of the key opportunities that we have here is to evaluate what that market looks like, what those market forces are. So when we're talking about building, what will the market build? Is it legal to build that thing right now? And if so, why not? So we might be limiting the market right now without knowing it. The market isn't only what we see right now. Mm-hmm. We can change that market with what we have here. So yeah. I think that's something to keep in mind, especially when we're talking about areas of opportunity like Grand Ave or underdeveloped commercial centers. Are there other potential use cases out there in the market if we reshape the market?
Well, yeah. Like, for example, if you turn, say, I assume that Trader Joe's, that shopping center, is just commercial use only at the moment, or is it at all? Yeah. So, I mean, just simply saying, well, that could be a mixed use, and opening that up to being like, oh, well, bringing in a business might be difficult because the 3-year commercial lease isn't feasible for a lot of small to medium-sized businesses, but I got a lot of tenants that could use a place to live, and I can build apartments above or turn sections of this. I mean, that just the Pier 1 building into housing, that would be a potential. So I agree. I think that that is a really good point that you are bringing up, Kevin.
Yeah. And so I think just to, again, chime in on another topic that we were addressing, I think I definitely agree with, you know, an indicator of success being who did we hear from. In-person workshops and public meetings impose a lot of limitations on people's schedules. So again, everyone captured the importance of that. And I think we also, the phrase I use is whether we were accurately presenting trade-offs in people's preferences. And I think that's one of the themes that Commissioner Berlin was trying to highlight. Yeah. Like, it's one thing to hear from the public that, you know, I want free, ample parking in my important places that I go in my life. But there are trade-offs imposed there with costs, you know, streetscapes, walkability, accessibility, affordability of, you know, available, you know, housing and land that is now used for parking. So again, when we're evaluating the feedback that we get from the community, we have to evaluate it, whether those opinions were expressed with trade-offs in mind or just as a, end goal. And that's, you know, that's hard to capture sometimes, but again, that's an important part of the facilitation of those discussions and how we interpret the information we get back from the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point.
Kevin, is it okay if I jump in, or do you have something else?
I have more, but you go ahead.
You go ahead.
I was just going to continue going down my...
No, go.
I was filling out my template, as Commissioner Berlin said. So, you know, indicators of success, the public participation for sure. And then in the end, how we craft, you know, the general plan. This is a 20-year plan. Kind of a joint indicator of success and key challenge. I like to reiterate the principles of an organization called Strong Towns, but no neighborhood can be exempt from change, and no neighborhood should experience sudden radical change. And if we can keep those principles in mind, what's a great indicator of success, and also the second one being the key challenge here is, you know, how do we focus growth? You know, how do we spread that around the city in, you know, certain areas that can sustain more growth without feeling like sudden radical change? You know, we're talking about opportunity zones like Grand Ave, controversial, but probably Village Core. And then how do we make sure that no neighborhood is completely exempt from change altogether? And I think that that needs to really challenge the way we talk about growth. I mean, Commissioner Berlin, not to pick on you, you used a phrase that I think a lot of people use, but growth as being mandated from the top down. The growth, mm-hmm. we need to, I think it's important, in my opinion, to communicate this as growth really being organic to our community in a lot of ways, right? We have Paulding Middle School right down the road. We have AG High.
Yeah.
A lot of those schools have seen enrollment growth, I'm sure, over the last 20 years. How do we find a place for, you know, those people in our community to live and to grow businesses? You know, businesses sure. can't grow if we stay stagnant. They can't survive in places that stay stagnant or frozen in amber. So, again, not exempting any one place from change and then, you know, allowing gradual change, incremental change across the city is an important indicator, like I said, joint indicator of success and key challenge that we should probably be aware of here.
Yeah, well taken. I agree.
I was going to jump into about Commissioner Sackerson, you mentioned the mixed use idea, and I was thinking that's a key opportunity is thinking about some out of the box ideas, things we haven't done before. So maybe not limiting our scope to what we know, but I'm thinking to when the Rugged Radio owner gave the presentation about building workforce housing to help with his business. That was a really out of the box to me idea of how we can build more housing. Cause I think one of our key challenges is housing. Like it's just housing. And I have a high schooler, I have two middle schoolers, and I'm just thinking like my babies aren't going to be able to afford to live here. And that just is, that makes me not want to live here anymore. And I love this town and I want to stay here, but I don't want to see our kids have to go because there's nowhere for them to be. So when we're talking about 20 and 30 years from now, I really want to see us put a premium on affordable housing. And I thought another opportunity to, in addition to this out-of-the-box idea, is what our neighbor or sister cities are doing, like Grover Beach. Not that we're Grover Beach, but they're doing some really out-of-the-box things for affordable housing, like that pallet housing thing that they did to help with their unhoused population. I just think, like, we don't need to recreate the wheel. Like, we have cities right next to us that are doing some really innovative, cool things. So maybe partnering with our neighbor cities, like how we did that ADU partnership, maybe it can even reduce the cost if we work together as opposed to, you know, being in our kind of AG silo. Not that AG isn't its own special community, but I thought that'd be a good opportunity is to see what some of our sister cities are doing.
Yeah, and rely on SLOCOG. I mean, isn't that what SLOCOG's role is, to help cities that, sorry, I'm just interjecting a quick thought. You know, SLOCOG, in my understanding, is their efforts are to help cities function well together within this San Luis County. I don't know if that's their mandate or one of their mission statements, but agreed, when we collaborate with our neighboring cities, I just think that's a win-win. I mean, not doing exactly what they do, but if we can partner on research or partner on a trial project or whatever,
or pilot grants. Project.
Yeah, you know, whatever. That's a good idea.
I think they even have a term for what they were. They're calling it housing affirmative city, or there was, maybe you guys know, but
I don't know what it is.
It was something like part of their vision is we're going to make it as easy to say yes to building housing as we can. So I'm not saying we have to do that exact same thing, but what are some of those pathways we can get towards affordable housing? Because I think that's going to be one of our most daunting challenges. We saw those RENA numbers from the other presentation. And
well, you know, beyond that, too, I mean, if we don't address it, the community is going to change no matter what, because we're going to have wealthy retirees here. And that's what's going to be the entire city at one point of time, because no one else will be able to afford to live here.
But I think one of the things that keeps me optimistic is, you know, as they did mention, we did just recently go through the housing element, and it is an element that gets revisited on a much more regular basis than, say, the rest of the general plan. So, I mean, we have hope. We have hope that our kids will be able to come back. I get what you're saying. You know, we want this to not – I think demographically our city is the most elderly in the county, right?
I didn't hear that. Most, I think that's correct.
And like that has consequences.
So what do we do to draw more people to move here? Mm-hmm. You know, we can do our part with trying to figure out code and whatnot to change the guidelines and make it affordable to live here, whether that's the housing element or building code and zoning and all of that, which I would love to be a part of that.
Yeah.
But beyond that, like,
that would be an indicator of success for me personally, too, is addressing a lot of our affordable housing challenges. Not saying we can solve everything, obviously, in a general plan, because if we could do that, we'd be magic.
Yeah.
But an indicator of success would be doing exactly what you're talking about.
But on a totally different note, I mean, what are the things that draw people to live here, right? And I know, like, our family, for example, with young kids, moved here because, in part, good schools. I wanted my kids to be able to go to AG High. But one of the things that I feel like we are lacking is, what are these kids at Paulding, what are these kids at AG High, where do they go? What do they have to do that's actually in AG? I mean, I see here there's recreational opportunities. You know, how do we address that? These are things that I think are equally important to the community beyond the economic part, although there is an element, obviously, how do we pay for this stuff? So I'm not suggesting we ever ignore that. But how do we have open spaces that we can develop? I don't even know what areas we have available to us. So I would like to learn more about that. So that, for me, is the challenge is education, right?
Can, like, you remind me, is parks an element? Parks and Rec, that's an element within this plan, correct?
That's
within
correct.
The general plan?
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, that's correct.
So, I mean, do we have open spaces where we can encourage kids to go and bike more? I mean, look at the success of Pismo Preserve. I mean, if we have areas up, not in within city limits, but like up in the canyons that we could develop, that would be incredible. I feel like Vista Lago has been really successful because it's something that's unique to our area that we can offer. I would love to see more stuff like that to get kids out. And also that's something that they can take into their adulthood and be a reason to want to stay or move back here.
Yeah, to add on to that, I think there's a good point. And one thing I had listed as key opportunities here is subdivisions. You know, we do have agricultural land in the city, and like it or not, a lot of that will probably be developed in the 20 years that we're planning here. So ensuring that, you know, subdivision codes, anything related to subdivisions in our development code or zoning maps, allowing, you know, what we might like to see in terms of lot sizes, in terms of open space, there is going to be a really, you know, challenge and opportunity here.
Yep. I did have one question that, as we were talking about this, that came up with the climate action plan. I'm kind of shifting gears a lot right now, but we can always go back. You had mentioned it really just covers like what are like the greenhouse gases that we're giving out. What about like adapting for climate change? Where does that fit within the general plan?
I think adaptation will be part of the climate action plan in terms of policies and potentially plans and programs. You know, climate change is obviously an issue beyond the boundaries of the city of Arroyo Grande, but
right.
A lot of communities are getting, you know, a little more innovative with it, and each community is identifying their own climate action plan,
mm-hmm.
climate resiliency plans, and
right.
things like that that address what each city can do within their boundaries.
Okay, so that will be part of our climate action plan. It won't just be mitigating. It will be also planning for and adapting to what we know is going to be part of what happens with us.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking fires, I'm thinking flooding. I mean, we're not up to the ocean, you know, like we don't touch that. So we don't really have to deal with like, you know, the tide surges or anything like that that are going to come, but we might.
Well, and we do
in
have
the flatter parts of the city.
Right. And some of that stuff will dovetail with our safety element, which is another element of the general plan. So normally those address wildfire, floods, things like that in Diablo Canyon.
Extreme heat could be
sure.
thing that we're going to have to deal with.
And obviously, you know, coordinate with the climate action plan as well.
Okay, thank you. That was just more of a general question on that.
And if I can just add on, yeah, it'd be a theme really throughout the general plan. So look at land use elements, land uses adjacent to the creek, for example, or in some of our wildfire urban interface areas. And then also one thing that we failed to mention tonight is the healthy communities aspect of the general plan update. So throughout the plan, there'll be policies that really encourage healthy communities. So these could be recreational opportunities or mitigation of certain environmental impacts and effects. So something's going to be present throughout the document.
That's what I figured, but I just kind of wanted the clarification. So thank you both for that. That's really encouraging.
Another question on the climate action plan since we're here. So I think you highlighted that at least the update of that happens last in the process. Is that how that went?
Well, it's more embedded within the whole process. The one that's sort of last, the development code update will start sort of in the process, and there will be at the end of that process an identification of, development code update and how it sort of mixes with the general plan update. The development code update may go beyond the general plan update for a certain time period, but the climate action plan is intended to be completed within the 3-year period, but it will be at the tail end. So we do need to, the EIR will have to anticipate all of these things, whether or not the climate action plan is something that requires and is part of the EIR is still up for question. So as we sort of lay out the process and get into it, those answers will become more clear as we sort of go along.
Yeah, and just whether it's just the climate action plan itself or climate action planning, I'm looking at the previous one, 50%, what's likely to be 50% of emissions are going to be from transportation. To mitigate those requires, planning through other means like land use element, any other of the most other of the elements that we would be planning here would have some impact on that. I think it's just wanted to call out the mutual dependencies between the general plan itself and any climate action plan here.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. On that same segue, I'm thinking some of the ideas that were broadcast just in shotgunning stuff out there. Last time we did this, there was a huge debate and then a last-minute change of zoning about one particular project that was zoned agricultural, and then they changed it to residential because houses were needed. And so anyways, that came at the tail end of the process. And so on that same kind of note, in tied to the climate action plan, there's a good chance. I got a number of friends, local friends that are farmers, longtime farmers, and generation of farmers that are getting old, and their kids are farming and finding out how tough it is to farm. And there's a good chance a lot of the younger farmers may not want to be farming in 20 years. And so part of our general plan update may reflect that some of our within the city boundaries ag land won't be ag land anymore. I don't know that, but that will impact our climate action plan significantly. So I don't know how that all gets massaged out in the process, but I'm assuming the consultants would, in the discussion process when we're kind of, getting some direction, discuss the, implications of some of these changes that we're talking about. I don't know. I mean, I don't pretend to know, but I'm open to hearing the intelligence about if we're converting ag land to residential, what's the carbon trade-off there? I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. It's a valid question. Yeah.
And Bruce, I think that's extremely pertinent because, and one of the reasons council elected to update the climate action plan simultaneously with the general plan, because they do walk hand in hand, and
yeah,
land use changes will have implications on the climate action plan and vice versa.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought of one more challenge as you were mentioning Diablo. It's a huge economic driver of our whole county. And it's all up in the air. So I think a big challenge will be kind of anticipating those economic effects, whether they stay open another 5 years, which is what it looks like, or perhaps longer, and we can't necessarily know those things, because I don't know if our county is fully prepared for the impacts of what that closure would mean economically, because it's not just those jobs. It's every business those jobs support in our community. So I just think that's going to be a key challenge. I mean, it may be an opportunity as well. Like, we can see these working together. Like, what kind of other economic ideas do we have that can help us offset that? But I just don't know. Can't think of any off the top of my head that would provide the number of jobs at that kind of pay scale in our area. So that's going to be a real challenge, I think, for our whole county, not just for us.
One thing on that note, too, one thing that the consultant stressed was that this is a living document. Mm-hmm. We do get the opportunity at this point to really comprehensively look at all of our elements at once, make sure they're internally and internally consistent and consistent with each other. But it is a living document, and, you know, we won't be able to forecast, you know, what's going to happen in 20 to 30 years, but we always have the ability to do a general plan amendment, look at our policies again. I would imagine we would do so, you know, hopefully multiple times before the 20 years are up, or 30 years, or whatever the horizon becomes. Just to keep that in mind, that, you know, we won't be able to forecast very well what happens with Diablo Canyon in terms of whether it stays open, whether or not it becomes something else that might be a revenue generating or even a job creation site. Mm-hmm. And some of that will just have to be left open. Luckily, we do have, as part of this, we have an economic element as well. So I can see potentially an amendment to that in the future. But clearly, you also have to make sure it's, again, consistent with all the other elements as you go along.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there's another big one in our community that's a nobody knows where the crystal ball is going to take us, and that's the dunes and the off-roading. You know, that's a significant economic driver for our area, not necessarily for AG, but for our area, which is, you know, obviously it impacts AG in some capacity, but we don't really know how that's going to end up in the end. It's all being, you know, bashed about in the courts, and we'll see where that goes. But regardless, we need to plan for our future. And so, you know, and that would be looking at all possible scenarios as best we can. So I know that's on your crystal ball, and we'll just have to do the best we can as a community to figure out what we can do to, you know, plan for the future with or without it. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Do we have any other areas of discussion we want to get in tonight?
No. I was just going to highlight another, I think we've kind of talked around it, but I just want to call out more explicitly. I think there's a huge key opportunity with the general plan update for think about the, like, incredibly valuable land and street space we have going from the end of Village Core here all the way down Grand Ave. You know, travel that entire stretch a lot, and you know, we're going from the foothills, from the farms to the wine country, all the way down to the beach. It's incredibly valuable, you know, streetscape and piece of land in our city. I think it would be a missed opportunity to come away from this general plan update without feeling, you know, very confident that we had, you know, through, you know, studies, economic analysis, asking, you know, builders, landowners, you know, how do we, you know, create the spaces that we want to see along Grand Ave, you know, housing, businesses, streetscapes. Some of that is going to be, might need to be subsidized in some way or incentivized in some way. Again, like I mentioned before, some of that might just be shaping the framework for, you know, what we allow and how we build in those specific places, like through zoning codes and development codes, and, you know, potentially changing, you know, street design or streetscapes around there to make it more inviting. but that is a huge opportunity that I'm looking at as in this general plan update, is how in 20 years we look at, you know, Branch Street here all the way down Grand Avenue and say, wow, look at this amazing place that we like had the opportunity to shape. And I think that could be really cool here.
That's a great point. I love the way you put that, from the mountains and the yeah, wineries to the beach. I was like, I've never thought of it but like that before, but yeah. You're absolutely right.
For sure. It is a good...
Yeah, totally agree, Kevin. That's such a good point. Like seeing ground as a whole, like we did Halcyon complete, and not that it has to be the same, but that whole area, it should make sense.
And granted, some of it's not within the city of Grover, or, no. You know, it's Grover Beach and not Arroyo Grande.
I love that idea.
I did have another area. One thing that I thought of, and I don't know how it works into the process, but, you know, I think it's really important to empower and involve city staff in the process. I mean, not just you guys in the planning department, but the engineering department has their intelligence and their input about how it's been, for one, but also they should be a part of the planning for the future. And I don't know how you do that, you know, maybe when Bill, you know, city manager acting, somehow there's a lot of people that have both CRP backgrounds like you guys do, that have gone to school to understand how cities and growth happens. But also, I think the engineering departments and the various other staff that you have is they should, even if they don't live in AG, they are involved with running our city. And they should have, even if it's internal in the auditing process that you're talking about doing right now, somehow their thoughts not should give any more weight than anybody else, but they have some insights there that I think it would be a mistake to not take into consideration. That I just thought of that, and I'm like, well, that's a good one. I don't know where that is in the process, but...
Thank you.
We did want to say, too, in case it was lost in all of the comprehensive general plan stuff, that we do have an East Grand Avenue overlay corridor that is part of the development. It's sort of embedded in the development code update. Mm-hmm. So there... We're certainly doing a development code update citywide, but there is a focus, a laser focus on that area as well.
Thank you.
Where is that in the process, Brian? Like, will that sometime be daylighted out as a project, or is it just going to always kind of be kept under the wing of the development? I don't.
Well, at this point, it's intended to be part of this general plan and development code update. There was, as you may know, sort of a separate effort a few years ago for a master plan for the East Grand Avenue corridor, where we've given that information as well to the the consultant, just as a background. There was some effort done, so there's some good data and stuff from that, but it's intended to be incorporated.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone have any additional comments or questions? I think this was, hopefully you guys got what you're intending on this, but I think I do need to turn it over to public comment. So if there's anyone in the public that would like to speak, please come forward and please introduce yourself.
Hi. Hi, I'm Jared. I live on the East Grand Corridor behind the Fair Oaks Theater. I wanted to kind of just touch on a lot of what you guys, mostly I just want to come and listen. But I really appreciated, Kevin, your comments on just the East Grand Corridor. And I think two pieces of success I just want to vocalize early, I guess, in this process are, this is a chance for the city to look in the mirror and kind of say, like, what's our reputation? True or not, like, what's it perceived by? And if we want economic growth, how do businesses or business people or developers look at AG? And I think an indicator of success is it simpler and clearer to develop in the city, right? There's this talk of incentives, and that doesn't always mean turning over dollars to developers. That can mean when you come here, like whether it's form-based code or something along those lines, where it's, here is what we as a city want, here's what we as a city envision, and here's the form-based code. If you build this, it will happen, right? Do developers have to have a long drawn out timeline where they're coming back to the board, like the city council over and over and over, and do they have to bear those costs, or is it a clear vision set forth that this is what we want. We get a chance to state that, and now give them a chance to then come in and have a reliable process that they can trust, and then they can account for that. They can mm-hmm. say, this is going to take X amount of time, and I can get this return, right? Whether it's rezoning or not, I think that's a huge opportunity to incentivize by making things clearer and more concise. Obviously, it has to be actionable. And so this is our chance to do it. And I think then the second piece, I'm probably not being clear or concise. The second piece then is also looking at what the reputation is. I'm involved in the South County Chamber, looking to start my own business. And the pretty consistent piece of advice I got that like stung as someone who lives in AG is, don't go to AG, go to Grover. If you want to run a business, go to Grover. Uh-huh. And I think it's hard to hear, but I think our ears need to be open to those pieces, right? Like what does the community around us say? And we don't have to listen to all of it. Like we don't have to act on all of it, but I think we need to listen right now and kind of say, like, what is the city, are we known for? Lots of awesome things. I'm two boys under three, like looking forward to raising them here for 20 years. Hopefully they can afford to live here too. But what are the areas that aren't necessarily perceived greatness about AG and how do we change that? How do we, you know, kind of right the ship, excuse me. So that's it. You'll probably see me around as we do this.
Thank you.
May I
Thank
ask you,
it's so appreciated.
May I ask you to specifically, if you can or are willing to explain like some of the reasoning behind why you may have gotten the don't do it in AG, do it in Grover? Just curious what.
It's just hard. It's the process isn't clear. You know, things are easy. You can walk into the counter in Grover and you can get things approved. If you want to add an ADU, it's a simple process. Like it's simple and it's known. I think like the two places I got told not to were AG and Oceano, and the reasoning was it's often convoluted. And so you can.
So this is specifically about building, not necessarily about business license.
This is businesses, but part of that is like getting a space. And,
sure.
And if you want to come and build a business, if you want to come and put a business in the village, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to make improvements to the building, like what's involved with that? How many public hearings do you have to go to? Like it's not a clear process where the city can say, these are the things we want to do in the village core. And if you follow these rules, if you follow these bounds that we set, you can get it done. And it's clear and easy. Or on East Grand, if you want to get something done, here's what we as a city have decided that we want. And so form-based code, here's exactly what you can do. If you match these rules, if you match these guidelines, you're good to go. And so we have a chance to set that. But then it's reliable from a business owner perspective or an investor perspective to say, you know, and I think I bring that up mostly from a perspective of I think – there's a little bit of like distrust probably isn't the right phrasing, but it's like I think we have a reputation and so of being a tough place to get stuff done or to get stuff changed. Like there's a contingent that's been here for a very long time that doesn't want to see change happen. Obviously, this is a process for their voices to be heard as well. My neighborhood specifically, I know it's turning over. It's new young families like mine that are moving in and want other things. And so that's my hope is to voice that and maybe I'm the minority, but that's my hope here tonight is make it clear, make it simple. And I think we might have to go slightly further than a city who doesn't have that reputation, I think is the point I'm trying to make. So the more clear and concise we can make it, the more likely that development will come. So.
Well heard.
Thank you so much. Was,
thank you.
I
really appreciate it.
So.
We wouldn't have stopped
Thanks
you.
Thanks for being here and do, you know, tell your friends and neighbors, when this general plan update is going on in a month from now, just a month from now,
oh, yeah.
Right here, get as many as they can to come and participate. We need people like you.
Well, and I think not to take more time, but I think one of the pieces I want to address too is like, my wife had to do bedtime alone tonight. You know, she was willing to do that so I could come because it's something I'm on TBID, like something I want to see, I want to be involved with, I want to make it. Like I love living here. Yeah. I want to make it a great place for my kids, but it's hard for specifically my demographic, parents of young kids,
totally.
To be at a meeting at 6 o'clock. And so,
do the Zoom meetings, does that make it more feasible for you guys? I mean, really, like what days and times do we need to show up at like soccer games? I mean, I'm not even joking. I'm serious.
Well, and like, I think some of it is async maybe. And so I haven't been on the website in super detail. So are there places where I can go and organize my thoughts and send a letter in?
Yeah.
So there is a comment, so that's great. Yeah.
So like I think those kinds of places, but then it's also communicating that out and a lot of it's on, that's what I hope to do with my friends and like, hey, you probably don't either want to or have the time to go sit in a meeting for a couple hours on that Tuesday night. But
yeah,
what you just bought a house here. You've got young kids that you hope to graduate from AG High. Like, this is our chance. This is a chance right now to do it. So anyway,
that's great.
Thank you so much, Jared.
Thank you guys for your time.
There's no one else in the room, so I will ask if there's anyone online that wants to give public comment.
Madam Chair, there are no members of the public on Zoom.
Thank you so much. Is there any additional questions or comments from my...
I just want to say again, thanks for the comment. I think that's exactly the kind of feedback that when we're talking about looking at what's holding some of these, the report specifically asked about development and redevelopment potential up in the city. So we need specific actionable feedback like that. It called out a note that I'd forgot to bring up that I had at the bottom here, which is, again, specifically finding out what's holding these processes back, whether it's building or starting a business, whatever that may be, because I went and assessed a few more standard or more objective criteria for certain zones in our city, like Village Core, the mixed use zones, and on paper it looks like you might be able to do something there. So I'm wondering, is it height that's holding some building back there? Is it parking, or is it other discretionary hurdles? I suspect it's the other discretionary hurdles, and that's going to be an important piece to, I'll say, rein in during this process if we at all can.
Yep. Absolutely. Thank you. Is there any other questions or comments? All right. Then we don't have to vote on anything, right? So I'll close that item, and we can move on to the notice of administrative items since July 18th. Is there any questions or comments from my fellow commissioners on this item? Is there any public comment on item 10? None in the room. Is there any online?
There is no one on Zoom.
Thank you for that. I'll close that item. Commission communications, do we have any comments or correspondence by the Planning Commission to each other? Mm-mm. No. Sounds good. And staff communications?
I do not have any staff communications.
All right. Well, with that, we will adjourn at 7:32. Thank you all. This was great. Yeah. Thank you for coming, too.
Yeah.
And being brave enough to speak. That's even more important.